Hello and welcome back to your weekly Masonic podcast, Whence Came You, featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. So in the studio with me today is my dog, Einstein, and he has for some reason taken a liking to following me around today. Anyway, first I have some news for you all. I'll be meeting a bunch of the Midnight Freemasons in a few weeks down in Southern Illinois for a lecture by Brother Chris Hodapp, who is the author of Freemasonry for Dummies. I'm very much looking forward to that. And speaking of authors, Brother Charles Harper's new book, Freemasonry in Black and White, was recently published. I put together a promo video for the book, and you can check that out on our Vimeo and YouTube channels. But I did want to mention that that book is also now available on Kindle. So definitely check that out if you can. If you're a Kindle reader, it's on there. If you want paper, it's there also. It's a great book which focuses on the racial divide in some areas in regards to lodges. Recently, I was contacted by one of the brothers who helps out over at a website which you may all be aware of. Maybe some of you don't know about it. But what if I told you there was a Facebook just for Freemasons? Well, in a way there is. It's called the Freemason Network. You join by going through the website, but they actually check your affiliations before letting you join. So it's not a tiled lodge per se, but it's pretty close. Anyway, that website has so much stuff to explore: videos, pictures, articles, blogs, streaming, user posts, etc. It's kind of a one-stop shop. It's even home to the Masonic Geocaching Society, which some of you have heard me mention before or read about my exploits geocaching around the United States. This site is hosted by the Scottish Rite Supreme Council 33rd Degree Southern Masonic Jurisdiction. So it has clout and has weight. We all know degrees don't go quote-unquote higher than the third degree, but you guys know what I'm talking about. So anyway, back to this contact I had. Well, the gentleman asked if the Midnight Freemasons would be willing to mirror our blog right there for the users on the freemasonnetwork.org. And they also wanted to have a blog page for this show. I don't need to tell you how excited I was. I added my show almost right away, and so yes, you can now check out the freemasonnetwork.org and find my podcast there. But also, what about the Midnight Freemasons? Well, after some discussion with Worshipful Brother Todd E. Creason, we decided that this would be a great opportunity to let even more brothers enjoy the articles we have. So yes, you can also catch the Midnight Freemasons on that site as well. And again, I would urge you guys to check it out. Don't let the sign-up process deter you. It's free, and let's be honest, you didn't become Freemasons by not asking for admittance, right? So check out our friends at the Freemason Network. The web address is www.freemasonnetwork.org. Now, I will be soon putting up a badge icon link on the website to take you there as well. And in fact, by the time this episode comes out, it may very well be there. So I want to say thanks to everyone who reads and checks out the Midnight Freemasons website, and also to our regular and guest contributors alike, that this was due to the great writing and the talent at the Midnight Freemasons. So congratulations to everyone there. Speaking of guest contributors, one of our guest contributors, Brother Brian Schimming, has accepted our invitation to become a regular contributor. So we are excited to bring him on and keep those good articles coming, brother. Congratulations. Now, the first piece I have this week is a short talk, and it's called The Gavel of Authority, from a Short Talk Bulletin, Volume 9, July 1931, Number 7, by Unknown. The common gavel is an instrument used by operative masons to break off the corners of rough stones the better to fit them for the builder's use, but we as free and accepted masons are taught to use for the more noble and glorious purposes of divesting our hearts and consciousness of all the vices and superfluities of life, thereby fitting our minds as living stones for that spiritual building, that house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Mackey, distinguished author, states that the name comes from gabble because the form of the common gavel resembles that of the gabble of a house. But the student will look in the ritual in vain for any allusion to the gavel as an instrument of authority, although in some form it is primarily the badge of power and authority of a master, and often in another form, and always in a lesser degree, of the wardens. In various jurisdictions throughout the United States, the interested visitor will find in use, in the East, common gavels, stonemasons' hammers made of both wood and metal. the ordinary mallet gavel of the legislative halls of the auctioneer's hammer, and a setting maul in all shapes and sizes. All these various implements in diverse forms and materials are used as the symbol of the authority of the master. Apparently it is not so important that we have a particular symbol, that is, that he can carry a common gavel or a setting maul, but that he have always in open lodge in his possession some instrument with which blows may be struck as a symbol of his power, his authority, his right to preside, and to rule. Many studious Freemasons contend with some show of reason that inasmuch as the common gavel, the mason's hammer with one sharp edge, is one of the working tools of a speculative entered apprentice, while the setting maul is not classified as the working tool, the gavel, and not the maul, is more logically the master's symbol of authority. Certainly, unless grand lodges have ruled otherwise, there is no argument to be used against a master presiding with a common gavel, whether real, of metal, or imitation, of rose, or other valuable wood. But those who find their only argument for the use of the common gavel as the symbol of a master's authority in the undoubted fact that it is one of the striking tools of the stonemason, as well as a working tool of the speculative craft, hardly go far enough into antiquity. As a symbol of authority, the hammer is as old as mythology. Thor, the Scandinavian son of Odin and Freya, possessed a miraculous and all-powerful hammer which he threw to his will. When this was accomplished, usually it was a slaying of an enemy or destruction of something which the god did not like. His accommodating hammer straightway returned to his hands. Thor, like Jove, also controlled thunderbolts, and from this early myth we associate lightning and thunder with the hammer. We also invert the thought to develop the idea of authority in a hammer or a gavel from its age-long association with the power of lightning. The connection is worldwide, and by no means confined either to Freemasonry or to Norse mythology. Thor and his hammer are at the bottom of the old hammer rite of possession. Thor, god of lightning, by virtue of his control of fire, was also the god of the domestic hearth. In ancient days, a bride, on taking possession of her new home, received a hammer thrown in her lap as a symbol of possession. When her husband purchased land, he took possession by throwing a hammer over it. The Indian god Parasurama, or Rama of the battle axe, obtained land from the god of the sea by throwing his battle axe over the earth and became possessed of all that it spanned. The South Sea Islanders use kelt or hammer, often of a huge size, before the chief's dwelling as a symbol of authority. Mrs. H.G.M. Murray Ainslie, the English authority on mythology, says, quote, "The hammer has its uses in Freemasonry as a symbol of authority. The auctioneer, too, used a hammer. Here we see possession implied by the falling or throwing down of a hammer. Thus, when the master of a lodge first brings down the gavel to convene the lodge, he by that blow says in effect, quote, 'By this act I take possession of this lodge,' end quote." G.W. Speth, famous writer on Freemasonry, draws attention to the curious articles drawn up by the stonemasons of Torgau in Saxony in 1462. "And every mason shall keep his lodge free of all strife, yea, his lodge shall be kept pure as the seat of justice. And no man shall bear false witnesses in his lodge, neither shall he defile it in any manner. Therefore shall no mason allow a harlot to enter his lodge, but if any one have aught to commune with her, he shall depart from the place of labor so far as one may cast a gavel. Grand lodges are sovereign within their jurisdictions. Whatever their ukase, it immediately becomes right within that jurisdiction. We find anomalies in American Freemasonry as a result. Thus, most jurisdictions demand that a master elect pass the chairs, or receive the degree of past master in a chapter of the Royal Arch before he may be installed. But that is not true in all jurisdictions. Where it obtains, the practice is both right and ancient. Its absence is right, when Grand Lodge has so ruled. Since the formation of the Mother Grand Lodge in 1717, Masonic jurists have conceded the right of a Grand Lodge to make Masons at sight as inherent. That is, the right to convene an occasional or emergent lodge under dispensation, set it to work, and disband it when its work is done. Some American grand lodges have ruled to that contrary. It is right in those jurisdictions that a grandmaster cannot make a mason at sight. In 43 of our 49 grand jurisdictions, two of the three great lights are the square and compasses. In the remaining six, compasses is incorrect, and compass is right. I, with every lexicographer, dictionary, encyclopedia, Masonic authority to the contrary, compass is right in the jurisdictions. Under the doctrine that whatever a Grand Lodge declares to be right, whether by actual words or by tacit agreement, is the law and the practice for that particular jurisdiction, any for the striking instrument, which is customary in the correct form in that jurisdiction. The grand jurisdiction, which sanctions setting malls in all three stations, uses the tool which is correct in that jurisdiction. If the Grand Lodge sets forth that the master shall use a common gavel, and the wardens setting malls, that practice is there correct. If nothing is said to imply that the master must use the common gavel as a symbol of authority, then the familiar form of the mallet or hammer, by far the commonest form of the presiding officer's instrument, may be considered as correct as any other. We are not very liberal-minded in our Masonic symbolism. The square and the compasses on our altars are hardly large or strong enough to play operative parts in the stone cutting and setting. The working tools we present to initiates are but miniatures of the real tools they symbolize. The trowel, which we tell a candidate is more especially the essential tool of a master mason, is usually far too small to spread any real cement between real stones. Certainly no gavel of wood, be its form what it may, can break off the corners of rough stones. So while the beauty of the symbolism of the common gavel as the presiding officer's instrument of authority is obvious, usage and custom and experience in many lodges have metamorphosed into a little mallet of wood, just as the tiny square upon the altar is an expedient metamorphosis of the great metal tool of an operative mason. Perhaps it is not so important that the wood of the gavel be carved to imitate some particular striking tool of the operative mason, as that the brethren understand the power and authority inherent in it. Whatever form of gavel is used, the master should always retain possession of the instrument and never have it beyond his reach. He should carry it with him when he moves about the lodge, whether in process of conferring a degree, or when the lodge is in charge of a junior warden at refreshment. This, be it noted, is not only because it is a symbol of authority, but to remind him that although his possession is the highest within the gift of the brethren, he is yet but a brother among brethren. Holding the highest power in the lodge, he exercises it by virtue of the commonest of the working tools. All powerful within the certain limits in the lodge, the master has the authority to temporarily transfer his power. He may honor a visitor by presenting him with the gavel, and should always remove his hat when the gavel passes. He may place another in the oriental chair to confer a degree in most jurisdictions, at which time he hands over the gavel of authority. Because he has the right to transfer the authority, he should always be in position to exercise it. Another reason for always retaining possession of his gavel. The authority by which the master rules is not, of course, the mere physical possession of a piece of wood or iron. The master may be a physical weakling. Some powerful 200-pounder may easily wrest him from the emblem of authority, but such forcible possession would not transfer the authority. The authority to use the gavel comes first from election and installation, the powers of both of which ceremonies rest on the authority of the Grand Lodge. Once installed, a master cannot be deprived of his gavel of authority except by the Grand Lodge, or the Grand Master ad interim, or his deputy acting in his stead. The brethren elect to the east, but cannot unelect, or take away the power they have once given. The gavel of authority is not transferable save by the will of the lawful possessor, except at the order of the Grand Lodge or the Grand Master or his deputy acting for him. In most jurisdictions, such an action by Grand Master or deputy ad interim is Grand Lodge. Is reviewable by the Grand Lodge at its next succeeding regular communication. The master enforces the authority of which the gavel is the symbol, first and usually last and all the time, by the goodwill and the Masonic practices of his brethren. Few lodges would tolerate disobedience to the gavel by any brother. Occasionally, a hot-headed brother has attempted to defy its power. In such cases, the master may ask the offender to leave the room. His failure to respond lays him open to charges of un-Masonic conduct and a Masonic trial. The master may request the marshal or the master of ceremonies to remove the offender, or the master may sometimes, as sometimes has been done, use the gavel to call from labor to refreshment, during which period there will be plenty to admonish the offender of the enormity of his offense against Masonic law, good manners, and good taste. The charges given a Mason at the close of all three degrees are generally held to have the binding force of all other Masonic teachings and obligations. The brother who signs by laws as a master Mason agrees by so doing to abide not only by them, but by all the unwritten usages and customs of the fraternity and all the admonishments of the charges. Those who know their ritual will recall that in the charge of the third degree it is said, the ancient landmarks of the order you are carefully to preserve and never suffer them to be infringed, countenance a departure from the ancient usages and customs of the fraternity. Obedience to the gavel is indeed an ancient usage and custom of the fraternity. Rarely is it defied, never with impunity, but to reach its fullest respect the gavel must be wisely used. It is fine to have a giant's strength. It is despicable to use it like a giant, applies in this statement. The master may do what he will in his lodge. He may cut off discussion, wrap a brother down, cause a brother to leave the room, refuse to put a motion, declare the lodge at recess, close at his pleasure, control debate, arrange the work, refuse a brother permission to speak, all with the gavel. But the wise master uses his great power sparingly and never arbitrarily. While the peace and harmony of the craft are maintained, he need not use it except as the ritual or custom of presiding in the lodge requires. If he so uses it, it will be respected, its possessor will be venerated, and its transfer to another hand will be considered by the brethren what it actually is, a great and signal honor. No master may pay a higher tribute to any brother than to entrust him with the gavel. He offers it to the Grand Master or his deputy representing him, because it is the right of those dignitaries to preside in all private lodges. He offers it to another to preside during the conferring of a degree or to a distinguished visitor as a mark of the greatest respect and confidence. A gavel is not a necessity. A master and two brethren can open and close a lodge if they have the great lights and a charter. Lesser lights, a gavel, wardens, columns, aprons, and altar are not essential. Without the great lights and a charter or dispensation, a lodge cannot be opened, though it has every other accessory. The gavel, then, is the symbol of authority, not the authority itself. Like all great symbols, it takes upon itself in the minds of the brethren something of the quality of the thing it symbolized. As we revere the cotton in stripes and stars which became the flag of our country, as we revere the paper and ink which became the great light in masonry, so also do Freemasons revere the little hammer, mallet, setting maul, or common gavel which typifies and symbolizes the height of a Masonic power and authority, the majesty of power, the wisdom of light which rest in and shine forth from the Oriental chair. All right, now quickly I need to mention that if you guys have been to our website, you know I have a Masonic businesses section. These are companies that are usually owned or operated by brothers. I don't just put up links willy-nilly. I check these guys out. I talk to them. Pocono Pens, for instance. He's a veteran who makes pens, and he's a brother. So there's a link. Check it out. Great stuff. Brother John Paul Gomez, if you're a Mason and have any social media connections, I'm sure you know who he is. He makes the best Masonic theme ties and now bow ties anywhere on this blue marble we call Earth. There's a link to that. There's product research gear bringing you tons of amazing tactical, camping, and survival gear. Toddy Creason's books, Rob Lewis's books, all of which are great. But I want to tell you about another I'll be adding very soon. About a year ago, I got in touch with this listener and we talked for more than an hour. We became fast friends. This brother is doing great work for his lodge, serves on several committees, and he is relatively new, I think a Mason for 5 years or less. But check this out. Brother Jeff Koch is his name, and we have conversed many times over the course of probably a year and a half, always about Masonry. Well, Brother Jeff Koch has a business, and I'll be adding it to the Masonic businesses. It's called PB&J Water Filtration. And let me just give you guys a quick rundown. PB&J Water is located in Lake Havasu City, Arizona, but he services all over the Mojave County, Parker, the Phoenix area, and performs work all over the United States. They're the only local water filtration company that services, repairs, and rebuilds water filtration equipment. They do commercial and residential, but here's the kicker. All of it, all his stuff is made right here in the United States. I love Brother Jeff and I love what he does. He actually has a business which helps everyone. Who doesn't drink water? Well, I will also say if you have water filtration on the mind and you have questions, you know who to get in touch with. This is a brother who is on the level. Check out the link on our website, wcypodcast.com, or you can head right over to his website, which is www.pbjh2o.com. They also have a Facebook page, so give them a like and spread the word. One of the things that when you click on that link, if you do decide to buy anything, you can put in a note in the sales field there that says WCY. And that helps him kind of track where you heard about him. So thanks, Brother Jeff, for doing what you do. Next, I wanted to continue our little expose on the Midnight Freemasons. This Nikum, who is a 33rd degree member, and he's a past master of Greenup Lodge number 125 in Illinois, and a plural member of Hutton Lodge number 698 in Illinois. He's a member of the Valley of Danville and is the past thrice potent master of the Danville Lodge of Perfection. He also serves as the Eastern Illinois Area Coordinator for the IL CHIP program for the Grand Lodge of Illinois, AFNAM. And he is in the Traveling Degrees Chairman for the Valley of Danville. Scott and his wife, Mary, live in Charleston, Illinois. He writes some really interesting posts, and he's super active in Masonry. There's quite a few of his posts all over the Midnight Freemasons, so if you have a few minutes, hop on there, surf around, and find some of his articles. They're very, very good. Now I have to take a minute to mention our affiliate Onnit Labs, who makes some great sporting supplements, also just day-to-day living supplements, as well as some killer workout equipment. Some of you have heard me talk about it before, but I used to have to take certain medications for some occasional anxiety. Well, I don't anymore because I take a supplement from Onnit. I can't say that it's going to work for you for the same reasons that I take it, but I will tell you, and so will countless others, that the product Alpha Brain works and increases focus and mental ability. It's just one of the supplements that they have that are great. I actually use 4 of their products, and right now I'm training for a 5K, so I don't need to tell you the edge that this kind of stuff will give you. I'm actually not a runner at all. I hate running, but I wanted to do a 5K for some time, maybe just to prove something to myself that I could do it. But I'm actually using a system called Couch to 5K, if you can believe that. It's pretty funny. But anyway, if you like Onnit stuff or you want to try them out, go to our site, wcypodcast.com, and click on the banner for them. Do your shopping and use a coupon code, which will always work for you, and it's WCY, and you'll get 10% off every time. It usually covers the tax and the shipping. Then they send a little kickback to the show to keep the lights on and the mic recording. By clicking through us, you should know that this isn't a site where stuff is marked up or anything. These are the regular prices that you would normally get if you had just went straight to their website. Also, they have sales all the time, so watch for posts that I do on Facebook for the sales, like they did a Father's Day sale, and you could still use the coupon, which saved people some big money. A couple other ways that you can support the show is through Stitcher Smart Radio. You just download the app, register for free using the promo code WhenceCameYou with no spaces, and the folks over there send us $1. We do have our own premium apps, which provide that same streaming content with an option to download and save. Plus, there are bonus features like the PDFs of the papers that we read and also a Masonic wallpaper for your mobile device each week. Alternatively, if you're not in the apps and you do want to help out, there is the donations button on our website, www.wcypodcast.com, which is run through PayPal. It's all secure. Many thanks to everyone who does support the show. It helps out so much. It really does enable me to do this show. Some of you know, but this show isn't my job. I have a regular 40-hour-a-week job too, so I appreciate all the help I can get. All right, next is this week's famous Freemason, George Shillabeer, born 1797, and he passed away in 1866. A coachmaker in Bloomsbury, George Shillabeer built the first 2 omnibuses in England. He introduced the omnibus in London on July 4, 1829, carrying 22 passengers. Railways, litigation, and competition forced him out of the transportation business into undertaking, where he invented an undertaker's vehicle, which combined a hearse in a mooring coach. He was initiated in February of 1827 in Etonian Lodge, Windsor, and affiliated with the Globe Lodge, number 23 in London, in 1829. That's it for this week. Please remember our podcast partners, The Winding Stairs, hosted by Brother Juan Sepulveda. Follow him on Twitter at WindingStairs33. And then there's also the Far From Centered podcast, hosted by Brother Rob Lewis. Follow him on Twitter at Far From Centered. Check out the Midnight Freemasons 3 times a week, 3 new articles every week, which come out on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Check out the FreemasonNetwork.org. And don't forget about our Masonic businesses, PB&J Water, Product Research Gear, Pocono Pens, and the many books by my friends. Love Me When I'm Gone by Rob Lewis, Freemasonry in Black and White by Brother Charles Harper, and A Catalog by Todd E. Creason. Lots of great stuff, I promise. If you have a second, rate our show on iTunes, and also find us on Facebook and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. We are also on Google Plus under the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to write me anytime, submit a piece for either the show or Midnight Freemasons, or just say hi. I respond personally to every email. My wife thinks that I'm nuts, but it means a lot to hear from you guys, and I think I owe it to you to respond personally. Many of you who have written me know that I get back to you pretty quick, and it shows. My typos are amazing. I'm pounding away on my iPhone all day, every day, literally. Thanks again to everyone. I'll talk to you all next week. Please be safe, and whether you're a dad or a stepdad or a boyfriend to a mom who has kids, remember, you're a dad. Have a happy Father's Day. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.